Okay, so do we start off the discussion with...
Well, let's say, like...
I think Shock Theater is a good place to to take off, because that was, again... I know for the three of us, Janine...
There was something similar. I don't recall that it was like a Saturday afternoon monster movie thing. I mean, it was always the classic monster movie, be it Godzilla versus Mothra or the Wolfman and all that jazz. And yeah, I remember those. And I love, you know, of course, you live to watch those things. And they were just, you know, what made me as nutty as I am at today.
Well, you know, it's a formative experience of watching all those movies is what bent all of us, I think, in the direction that we're currently bent. I think it's like you have. It's the stuff clicks for you or it doesn't. At a certain age, it's like you're gonna be interested in that kind of material, right, or you're gonna be one of these people that has no interest in anything, even, you know, horror related or fantasy related at all.
I am a soldier of our planet. I, a fiend. We did not come here as enemies. We came only with friendly intentions to talk, to ask your aid.
Our aid?
Because all you of Earth are idiots.
Now you just hold on, Buster.
No, you hold on.
You're way above our heads.
You see? You see? Your stupid minds! Stupid! Stupid!
And obviously, with the all of us here talking about this, then clearly we are all interested in that kind of stuff. So.
Well, sure. I mean, it goes beyond just, like, you know, a scary movie on Saturday morning. I mean, I would read the Stephen King books and the, Ramsey Campbell books.
Salem's Lot.
Watch the Twilight Zone.
Oh, yeah. Twilight Outer Zone. Limits, Twilight Zone.
Oh,
Night Gallery.
Sixth Sense.
Is that Sixth Sense? Is that an older show?
It's back in the day.
Cool. I don't know if I remember that.
I remember The Dark Room and some of those other sort of...
I remember the name The Dark Room, but I don't think I remember...
Hosted by James Coburn or something. Had like this real low angle shot of a camera zipping through a house, and then it would go up the stairs into the dark room.
We've talked about that. You've told me about it, but I don't think I ever saw it.
Yeah. I'm sure the opening's probably available on YouTube, but...
Definitely Twilight Zone.
And Outer Limits was one of my favorites. I remember staying up way late watching that, for sure.
There was a great show on WPTV out of Charlotte that came on Friday nights late, and it was called Reeling Back the Years, I think was what it was called. They used to play the song Reeling in the Years. But it was called Those Were the Years or something, and that was the show, and they would show serials. Like, they would show Flash Gordon, Buck Rogers kind of stuff from the 30s. They would show the thing where the guy had the chest piece, the knight, in his holster, the Western. Have Gun Will Travel with the name of a man. Have Gun Will Travel. They would show that. They would show Twilight Zone, Outer Limits, all kinds of cool shit.
Now, see, I was thinking of a thing the other day of way, way back where I used to listen to the... like Mystery Theater on the radio. Mm-hmm.
Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall.
And that scared the crap out of me. I remember laying there frozen in fear, just hearing the noises, because they were really creepy, because they had to have so much more, description of things, because it was all in your head. You know, you're just saying the words, but you're like, oh my God, I think I hear something in my room, and all of a sudden, I can't reach for the light, I'm frozen in fear.
The theater of the mind.
Yeah.
You know, that's like the difference between reading something and watching a movie.
Oh,
you always create Like, what you can create in your mind is a hell of a lot scarier than somebody can show.
And I lived in a 200-year-old farmhouse, so I didn't need much push before it was like, oh my God, there's something out there.
It's already potentially be haunted.
It was.
You're never going to imagine bad special effects. You're not going to imagine a cheesy monster with a zipper up the back.
Exactly.
But if you go watch a movie, they might have only had enough money for a cheesy monster.
I wake up all the time and think, damn CGI. Lousy CGI. I got Roland Emmerich.
Where's the
directed.
Man in the big Godzilla suit?
I got Roland Emmerich directing my dreams now.
But so Shock Theater was the kind of local version of that.
The guy that hosted it. You think he was the same one across the country?
I don't think so.
We didn't have a host on my Shock Theater that I watched. It was just.
I remember there being on WGHP at a High Point intermittently. I remember times there was a guy, and there was like this dude who was like a hipster type guy.
Did he always bite a nail? And I was kind of. That's a remember.
Well, I remember. There was another guy there who was like a young, and he was almost like a DJ type. It was like kind of a bad drive time DJ. Right, guy that would be on there occasionally. But what I remember clearly is as they would go to commercial, they had these shots that would say, like, stay tuned or we'll be right back. And I can remember those images so clearly. There was, like, this kind of ghoul leaning against a headstone with a stick over his shoulder with a lantern hanging on the end of the stick.
Okay,
wow.
Yeah.
And it would come out and say, we'll be right back or stay tuned.
Real familiar to me, too. But I remember the guy. He almost had like kind of your little dark hair and a beard and all, and he was just, you know, that kind of guy. And he always would like to be biting on a nail, and he's so evil. He hates nails.
He looked like Coffin Joe.
Nobody's like
Coffin Nail.
So, like, we had talked about this too, this sort of idea, and like to me, there was all this media that was available as a kid, and there was an old show on USA called Night Flight.
Join us for Night Flight's new filmmaker series with two bizarre offerings from Glasshouse Pictures, and celebrate summer with the Cars, the Go-Go's, and the Untouchables when Night Flight takes off to beaches, barbecues, and bikinis, followed by a viewer's choice profile of rock provocateur Malcolm McLaren. Stay with Night Flight for more movies, music, videos, and comedy in stereo all night long.
Night Flight was all this weird out there stuff, and they would show Subgenius videos and all this weird stuff. They'd show Reefer Madness, and
it was like it was sort of like the visual equivalent of the Dr. Demento show in a
Yay!
Way. If it was like if it was something freaky and weird, they would show it. They would find like, and it was like
an arty.
They would mix like kind of an odd soundtrack with like these freaky old. Films about devil worship from the 30s,
yes.
Where it would be like all these people dancing around the fire. And
like, it's pretty like edgy stuff.
I mean, I'm actually thankful I didn't see that until I was a little older, because some of that shit would have been like
it fascinated me. I mean, I guess
it would have been devastating though at like 8.
They would have shown
you know what I mean? It's cool at 11, but at 8 it would have been
way too much.
Well, they would have shown things like David Lynch's Rabbits and things like that. That's these weird little arty pieces that are short.
Yeah, that's true.
That was the kind of stuff when I was growing up. I lived for that. I would like just sit and watch it and go, "What is going? What the hell is this?" But I would watch it. They had a old one of these like Mighty Morphin Power Rangers shows from Japan that they had taken and dubbed. And it was like they had dubbed the voices and made them funny. So they go, hey, what are we going to do? I don't know. Let's go get a pizza. Ha! And they'd be chopping up big monsters and stuff. But it was actually a big, giant, you know, super...
It was kind of from the Ultraman mold kind of stuff. I know. I mean, Steve, we're talking about
Ultraman now.
What's the guy's name?
Which one? Hayata. Using the beta capsule, Hayata transforms into Ultraman.
No, that's I didn't get to watch Ultraman.
Oh, man.
I love Ultraman.
Me too.
No, I didn't get to watch Lost in Space, Ultraman.
Lost in Space.
Those things weren't on the regular TV, and nobody had cable, so.
We never had cable, but Lost in Space would, like, run on Sunday morning at 9:30 or some kind of odd time on, like, remember Channel 48, WGGT?
Or 36.
It was when the UHF channels were really coming online, and then it's when you could see some weirder stuff.
Channel 36 from Charlotte.
Yes.
Yes, that was the one that I couldn't pick up.
Now, see, we couldn't get that, but we got WGGT, and it was 48 out of somewhere. I don't even know where the hell it was from, but, like, thank God we didn't have any religion, because we would have missed, like, Lost in Space, and then, like, Sunday mornings would be, like, they would show...
There's a lot of reasons to be thankful you didn't have religion.
True. But there would be, like, Lost in Space.
Podcast, right.
That would be a different podcast, for sure. Lost in Space, and then they would show, like, one of the really old Tarzan movies, and then they would show... like a comedy that would be like either Ma and Pa Kettle or Francis the Talking Mule and like all these old movies.
See, that sounds like the same routine was this Sunday morning. Or it seemed like after church, sort of, I guess. It was like 11 to 12, and the same thing. It would show the whole Ma and Pa Kettle thing, and then some, Abbott and Costello Meet the Wolfman kind of deal, and that was always... fun too.
I've actually kind of been introducing the kids, so we've been watching a lot.
Oh, they love Costello. Yeah, my kids love. I've got the Wolfman or Abbott Costello Meet Frankenstein, the Wolfman, and Dracula.
The Mummy. Not the Mummy.
But they did. Vincent Price did like a little voiceover thing at the very end because he was the Invisible Man at the time.
So
was the funny, the ending little shtick where they're in the boat and they're like, gosh. You know, thank goodness this is over, and do you gentlemen have a light? You know, his voice comes out,
and the cigarette
floats, and they both jump off the boat, and it was, my girls love that.
The whole thing was brought to you by Philip Morris.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah.
Probably.
Exactly.
So Janine, like, what were, like, as you look back, like, what were some of the shows or movies or episodes of a show, like, what's one that stands out in your mind as something where afterwards all the lights were on, and it was tough dealing with it?
Well, mostly, oddly enough, The Wizard of Oz and The Flying Monkeys to this day still scare the crap out of me. A friend of mine dressed up as one for Halloween a couple of years ago. I couldn't even look at him in the face. It was just, there's something about, and then monkeys in general just freaked me out. But I was thinking about that, and it was aliens. I have issues with aliens.
Kind of alien abduction stuff, or
just War of the Worlds, and just there was a point in time where I was really listening again. It was to the radio, and most of what people were talking about, they've seen alien sightings or there's UFO kind of things. What? And then my sister-in-law at the time happened to just get on my last nerve and kind of fuel the fire, where she was like, did you hear that they saw a UFO or something down, and that's all it took. So I was upstairs in this 200-year-old farmhouse all by myself. Up in my bedroom was upstairs all by myself. And it's all I thought of was there's aliens upstairs and they're going to take me away. Oh, and that wasn't, it was just all the, besides Dr. Demento. And then, it was just any of those, the movies with the giant ants. I can't remember what they were. Yeah. And anything that the aliens and the atomic, because I was kind of concerned about all those things as a kid.
Well, that was part of the whole kind of zeitgeist that we lived in at that time. I mean,
that other people lived in, because I was but a glimmer in someone's eye at that point.
But I think even, I mean, for me, even when I was little, I had like...
In the early, late 60s, there was still
I think on up through the 70s, I mean, there was still like...
Oh, there was fear of the Cold War and their Holocaust.
The bomb, and like anything that I would... And I guess maybe I was sort of...
like them.
I was kind of... How we were tied into that, though, is because we were watching shock theater, and we were watching all the movies about what atomic mutation was going to do to us.
It gave us Godzilla.
It was like all that...
The upside of down right there. That's the good thing.
It's like you got the giant ants, bad. Giant Tyrannosaurus, maybe? I don't know what they
crossed with a gorilla, or whatever the hell he is.
Really good.
Thunder Lizard.
That's Thunder Lizard. The mighty Thunder Lizard. Terrible Thunder Lizards, that was the name of the
cartoon. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that'll do it. Aliens to this day.
And Mike, you saw
no specific movie though. No, you don't remember like that kind of watershed.
other than thing the that, flying monkeys in Wizard of Oz and that's and you, tornadoes.
I think that's you and about 80% of the population.
Oh, yeah.
They got warped
well, they
by the
did
flying
that
monkey.
Thing. Well, and I'll tell you, I was watching, I would watch Captain Kangaroo, and they had this little puppet guy, and it was a monkey, and I vividly remember having a nightmare about them monkey puppet yeah. thing going.
Like
and I woke up peeing my pants.
Ping pong ball.
No. No. I have no problem with ping pong.
Or bunny rabbits.
Or bunny rabbits or mooses, yes. Or
how
Mr.
about
Regis.
Squirrels.
Squirrels.
Moose and squirrels.
Moose and squirrel.
So, yeah, I can remember being very little and having a reoccurring nightmare where my house had a basement, and I would go down the steps into the basement, and none of the light switches worked.
Oh, yeah.
And in the corner of the basement, because at one point the basement was empty, my dad kept a stack of tires. So there was this fairly tall stack of, like, discarded or, you know, going to be replaced soon tires over in the corner. And in my dream, I went downstairs, and it was really dark, but I could look over in the corner and see the stack of tires, and like the tires sort of separate and there's two little glinty eyes looking out from inside the stack of tires at me.
The Michelin monster. Oh my god.
In this dream, like all of a sudden the tires flop back down and this witch, like a caricature witch, like the one that chases Bugs Bunny around with all the hair jumps up on
witch
top
Hazel.
Of the thing. And it's like looking at me like,
about WB.
Like it's time to put this in the oven and cook it up. And I'm like, I freak out and run out the back of the out of the back of the basement. Well, actually, I don't run out. I get on my tricycle. This is how little I was.
Oh my goodness!
That my tricycle was my mother to scale. So I get on the tricycle and I'm pedaling like a motherfucker. And I'm going down the back road. And I come up the back of the house and I'm pedaling really fast. And she's behind me on her broom.
Holy crap!
And I'm freaking out. And as I'm pedaling, all of a sudden I'm going so fast that, like, the tricycle starts to leave the ground. And I'm trying to balance the tricycle so that I don't flip off and she's right behind me. And then I would wake up.
Double, double, toil and trouble. Fire burn and cauldron bubble. Not bad.
Awesome.
And I had that dream multiple times.
Isn't that weird? And there's no specific whatever. It was all these pieces of parts that our little brains put together.
But it was scary as hell.
It's
like a psychotronic collage. You just took little pieces of everything that was bizarre and weird from your childhood and kind of made an amalgam.
You had a big wheel. You could have got away.
The dream machine.
If I only had a big
I only had spirit.
Remember those ponies that you get up and down and they go on those wheels?
Yeah.
I had one on springs. I couldn't go anywhere. Up and down.
Yeah, it was like, and then every time you do it, it'd move about this far.
And then it would break.
Oh, yeah, please.
You could have been like ran down by a caterpillar on one of those things. Look back, it's just like thousands of people.
They're passing you, giving you the finger. They're like, yes, you're like
elderly caterpillars. They pass and leave their turn signal on. Thousands of middle fingers at the same time.
Can you imagine if you pissed off a caterpillar? That would be a lot of
maybe the one from, what was it, the monster that conquered the world,
yes.
And the one we talked about the other day. What was it?
The monster that challenged the
challenged
world.
The world with the big giant
challenge.
Sea snail creatures.
Oh, yeah. Was that the one? No, I'm thinking of the one with all the little Japanese. What were those little Japanese women?
That's from Mothra.
Mothra, okay.
Yeah, where they in a cage and they sing.
Yeah.
Yeah, the monster that challenged the world, that was a shock theater.
Especially. Sure, yeah.
But the big ones to me on shock theater were Frankenstein versus the Wolfman. Because it had both monsters. It had Bela Lugosi in there as Frankenstein. Then you had Lon Chaney Jr. as the Wolfman, the real Wolfman. And then all the cool Frankenstein equipment and stuff.
Yes.
And that awesome scene at the end where they destroy the dam and it comes down and destroys Frankenstein's castle. Spoiler alert. But I love that one. That one, that and Godzilla stuff, those were my favorites.
Godzilla
I remember
stuff.
Always being excited if it was a giant monster movie. Because I watched shock theater religiously. Every Saturday night, it was like 11 o'clock. get in front of the TV, you're waiting for it to come on, and it was like, what's it going to be? What's it going to be? And when it was Godzilla or something, it was always like big celebration exactly. for that. But I watched regardless
of Monster that. Island.
Well, it was
Monster
like.
Monster Island, come in.
It was blowing smoke rings.
I love that one.
It was Saturday afternoon, Shock Theater.
For you?
Up in the mountains.
Yeah. This was late at night, which I think really added.
Oh, absolutely.
That added like an element of. Because you're young. And you're really kind of up late in that semi-forbidden kind of thing. You're really kind of not exactly following the rules. And then you're watching these movies that are...
filling your mind full of fear.
And that's the thing is horror movies tend to be like... They're not very morally ambiguous anyway. I mean, it's very much like...
Not the ones that they're shown on Shutter.
Right. It's like very black and white in the sense of the... Most of them were shot in black and white. But also kind of the ideas are very... Mm-hmm. You know, bad people...
Right.
Yeah, if you do something wrong, but something's going to happen to you.
Occasionally on the Shock Theater that I watched, they would show like a Hammer film, like a color British vampire movie.
Once in a while.
Yeah, what was that one?
Hammer movies. They're
like
so good.
Some sort of demonic cult, like always, and they're trying to sacrifice these women.
There's one called The Satanic Rites of Dracula from about 72.
That's it. That's
where Christopher
one.
Lee.
Yes.
He is Dracula, and he is like this... ultra cool businessman type, and like
it's
he's
almost
got,
like a James Bondish,
absolutely,
or James Bondage, because there were like there were glimpses of like boobage and stuff, and I'm thinking,
oh, that was the beauty of
they're
Hammer.
Like gonna and I'm like, whoa,
Hammer
I should
was
be
like
watching this,
pushing the envelope. Yes. There was always like lots of like for the time, lots of gore,
yeah,
and lots of cleavage.
Yeah,
and
there
that was.
Was
always like that added again to that element of sort of forbidden.
Oh, yeah. I was always looking around going, oh, if my mom sees me watching the boobs, I'm going to be in trouble.
Well, that was the thing. I mean, you'd watch it be like a black and white movie from the 30s, or it might be a 1970s era British vampire movie or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And it was, you never knew what you were going to get. Like you said, it was a roulette sort of situation, and sometimes it was completely awesome and scary. I can remember clearly watching a Christopher Lee vampire movie at the laundromat with my mother, because they had a TV there, and I was just like, let's not go.
Fluff and fold, Mom, fluff and fold.
I think this has still got a stain. But I can remember it at the end.
Here, you're going to need to watch this. This is really scary.
That's right. I have just soiled these again.
Let me have that there.
But at the end, it's the one where Peter Cushing holds the candlesticks.
Yeah.
And forces him down into the sunlight and whips the curtains back.
Yes.
And it's all that's left is his ring.
Oh, yeah. The ring.
But yes. All those movies, Christopher Lee just hisses. He doesn't really speak.
Well, he was like that at that point. I think the Dracula character they eschewed any of the suave sophistication. Where Lugosi really, that was a big part of what they were trying to do with the character, was that he was charming. But like Christopher Lee's Dracula was much more brutal and animalistic.
Yeah.
He was evil. He was just evil. He was not going to come in and kind of be swarthy and charming to get his way.
He was going to come in and bite your ass.
He was going to come in and get what he wanted.
Yeah. And have women.
There was one, and I don't know which one it is of the Hammer movies, but again, it was a Shock Theater thing. And I remember, I watched Shock Theater enough that they had a certain number of movies, apparently, because like it got to the point where instead of it being like, ooh, is it going to be a Godzilla movie? It was like, which one's it going to be?
Right.
It's like, oh, it's this one again.
No, that's true.
Because there's one where these priests are, they're doing something up at the abbey that's up on the mountain.
Yeah.
And there's an accident, and one of the priests falls.
Yeah.
And he falls, and he hits his head on a rock.
His blood.
And the blood, you see the blood trickling down through the rocks, down the mountain. And Dracula, Christopher Lee, is frozen in the ice in the river where the running water stopped.
Oh, my gosh, I remember that.
And where just his face is out of the ice like this, and the blood runs across his lips.
Exactly. Yeah.
And he's back. Yeah. And then it's the opening of the movie.
That one where he falls into the ice, where he's like...
At the end, because
like
Peter Cushing is out there shooting the ice around him.
That is awesome.
And the piece of ice is like... I mean, it's amazing stuff. That was a great one.
So then I guess that would be the next one. If once you got
See, I wish I knew. I mean, I've seen a bunch of the Hammer things, but I don't know the.
Right.
I have several of those,
And I've watched some recently, like when Surf the Channel or some of those streaming websites were on, and like we were downloading a bunch of stuff. I think that's where I saw the Satanic Rites of Dracula just maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
I've got
and
a DVD.
Really good.
And I've got, what was that one we were talking about with the carnival?
Carnival of Souls.
Carnival of Souls.
Oh, my God.
I watched that one not too long ago.
I bought the crazy, like, in the midnight, you know, pay $29.99 or whatever for
like 50.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the worst.
Because you brought it
the
in, and I was like,
worst.
I don't know most of it.
Oh, yeah, they were great.
Carnival of Souls, it's got some brilliant acting in it, obviously, but, like,
it's scary.
It is. There's a freaky otherworldly thing going on with it, where it's not just... it's not just a B-movie with bad acting like a lot of the movies are. The dude, he would really... made something effectively creepy and unsettling.
It was unsettling is a good word. Yeah.
It's really good.
Exactly.
Like I've ever seen that.
This is the shocking story of a who crawled from the river to race through a nightmare, walking a tightrope between heaven and hell. From the unreal, she crashes through to reality. But try as she will to lead a normal life, she is torn from a goal. There's no privacy in a life she's ever watched. Tormented. Either it's her neighbor, desirous of her physically, watching her with his leering eye, or it's the evil eye of the man who taunts her, the man who wants her. From the bottom of the river they come. They reach for her. They demand that she dance with them at the Carnival of Souls. She is a girl driven mad by the relentless forces of the beyond. He will not relent. As he comes for her again and again. She whirls between the real and the unreal, trying to cling to life.
I like being with you, really I do. I don't want to be alone tonight. I want to be near you.
Honey, you don't want to go in there all by yourself, do you?
But she must watch herself in death. She must dance at the Carnival of Souls held just for her. For they have come for her for the last time, claiming her as one of their own.
It's this woman, she's in a car accident, and spoiler alert.
Oops.
She's in a car accident, and then, like, basically the rest of the movie is her sort of, you don't know if she's alive or dead. She's sort of trapped between life and death, and like, she keeps going about her business, you know, kind of just trying to get through the day or whatever, but like she keeps seeing these kind of ghouls, these figures just appear, and they're kind of dark circles around their eyes. It's very minimalist kind of production because, I mean, they was made for no money.
Oh, yeah.
But still, like, really creepy and effective, and apparently the look of the ghouls and stuff was a huge influence for George Romero when he made Night of the Living Dead. He had seen, that was one of the things that inspired him to do it, was he had seen Carnival of Souls and said that was really good. If they can do it for no money, then we should be able to go make a movie for no money. And obviously, they did.
And it was it 60s?
Early 60s, probably.
Oh, yeah, like
I'm thinking 61, too.
Yeah, 61, 62.
So, I want to say this. We just read about something called The Devil's Partner. The one that they said is like Hell Comes to Mayberry.
Well, that's like the Centaur on the cover.
A gall.
Yeah, it's like we found that on Wrong Side of the Yard.
Wrong Side of the Yard.
Amazing website full of amazing posters from amazing films.
And our blog site, there's in our link section, you can go and you can link over to it. And if you go, just go every day and look, and it'll be a few different posters up on their main page every day, and it'll be stuff that's so amazingly obscure that you've never heard of.
And they're really awesome, high-res,
print quality
scans.
Yeah, yes. You could really print a pretty nice-sized poster off of them.
And I intend to.
Yeah. The coolest.
Yes,
exactly.
The cave will be.
That's right. This cave we're recording in will be festooned with old movie posters. So,
Shock Theater, another movie that was huge for me, was one of the Harryhausen movies called 10 Million Miles to Earth.
Yes.
And it was one of the ones that, like, if it was on, and I knew, like, from the opening credits that it was that movie because I've seen it so many times. It opens up with an alien spacecraft crashing into the ocean off the coast of Italy.
What's that thing called? It starts with an L, doesn't it? Like the Lemur or the...
Something like that. There's a creature. What happens is this spaceship crashes into the ocean off the coast of Italy, and there's these fishermen out here pulling their nets in, and they're in these tiny little boats. Well, they row over to see if anybody survived this crash. Well, they get in and they don't find anybody. They get out. You see the ship sink. Well, the little Italian boy finds an egg that's washed up on the beach, and he takes the egg to an American scientist who is there studying marine life. And the egg, he puts it in this cage, and it grows and hatches out, and it's this tiny little humanoid creature about, 8 inches tall.
With a tail
and very kind of reptilian features. It's this awesome Harryhausen animation, Harryhausen. Yeah. So,
right.
But like the thing grows just like exponentially. So then it's like 2 feet tall, then it's 3 or 4 feet tall, and then it's man sized, and then it escapes, and then there's the hunt through the countryside to go and find it. And again, spoiler alert, it ends up with. I keep deferring to the microphone, but
you should consider it the fifth Beatle.
Don't look directly at it.
That's right. Avert your eyes.
Break the illusion. But it ends with a like you see the thing. It's in the Colosseum in Rome. Is where they're trying. They finally get the thing kind of cornered in the Colosseum in Rome, and the military's there, and it's just
and it's like going, are you not amused?
That's right. Games. Oh, but damn. Great movie. 10 Million Miles to Earth.
They're all good. All those Sinbad movies.
Oh, yeah, well, Sinbad. It's right here. Yeah. Now, that all was those the, Sinbad That movies. Was the Sunday afternoon matinee. They always played those. Those were wonderful. I think that definitely creeped me out with the Cyclops and all all the characters.
Medusa.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But then you
I was
also
always able to handle the that kind of stuff. That because that
didn't
kind of
get,
was off a little more into the fantasy realm. But they were like the it never freaked me out. Like I was enthralled,
like chewing on things, and really I don't know. It just seemed a.
But I
think, so was I while I was watching.
That was Sunday afternoon matinee popcorn.
It was, but I relayed this to Marty in detail. The movie that like I think was that was like the tipping point for me, where it was like I became either completely warped or obsessed or whatever with horror, was the movie The Tingler. Do you know The Tingler?
Oh yeah,
Vincent Price.
Yeah.
I'm William Castle, and I feel obligated to warn you about the next attraction you will see at this theater. The picture is The Tingler, which I directed. And for the first time in motion picture history, members of the audience, including you, will actually play a part in the picture. You will feel some of the physical reactions, the shocking sensations experienced by the actors on the screen. I guarantee that The Tingler has more shocks per minute than my last film, The House on Haunted Hill. But don't be alarmed. You can protect yourself. When you see the picture, you will be told and remember the instruction how you can guard yourself from attack by The Tingler. And now may I show you a few scenes from The Tingler?
I watched that when I was way too young. Mm-hmm. I was 7, 8 years old. Probably closer. I was too young to be up watching shock theater by myself, but I was sitting completely alone in the dark watching this. And there's the thing where, if you've not seen it, you've seen it, I think, haven't you, Steve?
I don't know if I have or not.
The Tingler, what it is there's a thing, this scientist, Vincent Price, he postulates this theory that everybody has in their body a thing called a Tingler. And it lives on your spine.
Easy now.
And it looks like, yeah, well, right, hold on.
Oh, I'm tingling.
It looks like, it looks like, again, back to caterpillars, it looks like sort of a giant caterpillar-type creature. And it lives on your spine. And when you become frightened, it'll start to kind of constrict. And the only way you can stop that is to scream. And that releases the pressure. So if you get scared and you can't scream, it will kill you. It will break your back and kill you. Well, the vagaries of the plot right now, it's been so long since I've seen it, I don't remember exactly how, but he relays this to a guy who is a real winner, who's a theater owner, whose wife is a mute, and apparently she's just more than he needs to deal with right now, so he's going to do away with her. So he sets up
about divorce. I just want to kill her.
No alimony.
That takes too long.
He sets up this whole scenario in their apartment where he's like a she apparently is a terrified of the sight of blood, and this is something that he knows. So like, he's got this thing set up where she's in the apartment and he's of this mask and he has an axe and he's chasing her through the apartment, and she goes in the bathroom, and then she's, I don't know why people in horror movies are going to go wash your face in the middle of being chased by an axe, but she goes in and she turns the sink on and blood comes out of the faucets, and she looks over and the bathtub is just overflowing with blood, and there's a hand rising out of the blood in the bathtub.
And this black and white, so it's actually probably rising out of a pool of chocolate syrup.
Actually, I'm almost sure. We never had a color television, so I don't know this.
I think it's black and white.
I thought that sequence was in color, and I thought that was part of, because William Castle was the gimmick king. He always had like a gimmick with his movies, and like the thing with the tingler is because the things in your back, what they actually did was wire seats in the audience.
Right.
At every showing, periodically one of the seats would buzz, because there's a scene in the movie where Vincent Price removes a tingler from somebody's body, but it escapes and it actually gets loose in the movie theater that the guy in the movie owns. So in the movie, you're watching it crawl underneath the seats as these people are watching the movie. And then when they were showing it, they would zap the seats and get a few people screaming. And it would get the whole audience worked up. But I watched that, and when I don't know, it just did something. It clicked something in my brain. I had to go through the house to my room and turn lights on as I went through the house. Then I came back, and I would turn off a light and run into the next room, and turn off the next light and run into the next room, so I could not be in the dark. And I mean, I dreamed about that so many times. I could see that hand coming up out of the bathtub of blood. It was like a scarring thing to me. And then, but it was like, instead of me having the reaction of, I'm never going to watch anything like this again. I just entrenched me. Then it was
exactly.
Like, when are they going to show that again?
Well, that's the thing. And the Vincent Price, when you mentioned that, I was thinking of The House of Wax and all the Poe.
Yes.
He did that whole thing.
Yeah.
That was one that just, that was like the trigger of like, yeah, I want more of that. Vincent Price and just watching all that, and House on Haunted Hill. And
another William Castle movie.
Yeah, God.
House on Haunted Hill and 13 Ghosts are both William Castle movies.
13 Ghosts.
And completely freaked me out.
Mm-hmm.
There was the thing with the ghost of the lion tamer who had no head because the lion had chewed his head off.
I was like, when they pushed...
Lion tamer!
The wife got into the acid bath or something, and she's... I can't remember what the sequence, but the wife was downstairs in the House on Haunted Hill, or in, the basement or whatever, and... Wasn't there a skeleton that came out of the acid, or did she fall into the acid?
The skeleton comes flying out during House on Haunted Hill, because that was the gimmick for that movie.
And
you find out later in the movie that Vincent Price, it's actually something he set up. Because you see him with this mechanism, he's doing.
Yeah.
He's cranking this thing, and the skeleton flies through.
Thing ever, and I just was like, I want to do that somewhere, somehow. And so it just started my little wheels in my head. And I tried, living on a farm around Halloween time, we would go out into the barn and we would set up all this crazy crap. And I would scare my sister, and my nieces and nephews would come out with me. And I would set up all these little scenarios and build these little, sets out there just to scare the crap out of my family.
Well, I used to sit and make, do makeup. I make masks and did special effects makeup, and like that's what I would do on the weekends.
Yeah.
We'd just create all these gory, horrible things and take pictures.
Black lipstick stuff. I made it out of this. I would actually take food color. Well, I figured out the whole blood gel thing before anybody even said it. Use corn syrup and food coloring, and voila. And I would just put it on and lay there somewhere. My mom would find me and be like, "Wow!" It's like, "Hey, I'm okay." But yeah, the whole thing, like,
acting.
I remember laying upside down on a chair and just with my eyes wide open, and my mom would be like, Janine, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. And she'd be like,
My parents became completely like nonplussed by the whole thing. They would open my bedroom door and there would be like, part of a severed head laying here on the dresser, and then like a hand or fingers, because I found out that I would cast my fingers in plaster and then put a silicone bathtub caulk.
Oh, cool.
You can just pump that in there and make these great looking fingers and put a little makeup on them.
That's wonderful.
Punch hairs into them, actually, so make them look more realistic. And so we Anything like
yeah,
that.
Oh, yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've got a picture somewhere of where I set up this little trap door kind of thing for one of my nephews to come over at Halloween time, and you open the door, it would throw something down on them somewhere. But I was still, I started in that mode of, I'm going to scare people, and I just wanted to do stuff to scare people. Not totally crazy. I wish I hadn't thought about the whole plaster and the silicone thing. That sounded good. But yeah, I just do, again, the makeup and costumes, and, you know, we would carve pumpkins, just like, you know, all sorts of over the top kind of things. More so, and I guess it was all the triggers from the movies and the, you know, the radio shows that would scare me, and I love that feeling. And yeah. I wanted to, once
it's
you
like
got,
you want to share that.
Yeah, and then once
that
you,
exhilaration.
And once you knew you could do that to people, you were like, how else can I do this to people?
Well, yeah.
And we would go to like the local haunted houses, you know, the Masons or the whatever.
Bloody Freemasons, I don't know.
The Bloody
Freemasons. The whole world anyway.
Blackballing bad.
That's right. Then at the Illuminati haunted house. The New World Order.
Yeah, that's the one night the year it's unilluminated.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
You were talking about the thing with the skeleton rising up out of the pit of ashes or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, totally made me remember this thing. We had gone to Six Flags or some amusement park, but to me, I remember it being like kind of low rent, so it might not have been Six Flags, but it was some sort of
four flags.
Two and a half.
And the two pennants.
But they had a haunted house, and I wasn't really that interested in going into it because I loved that sort of separation of watching something on TV, but I didn't really want to go someplace where dudes are going to grab me or where things are going to come out physically. So, but there was a thing in there where it was a big
no touchy.
No, it's a bad touch.
Ranger Dagger.
Just say no.
There was a big vat of probably what was supposed to be acid. And even in my memory, I can remember it being cheesy, like really stupid.
Right.
But at some point, this very mechanical skeleton rises up out of the other end of the thing and moves
comes
across towards me. And it's all smoky and stuff.
You can hear the sprocket and the
change. Totally. It was like, me. And it got to the end, and it goes,
and it locks in.
It goes back down. And I was completely horrified. I was like, let's get out of here. I cannot bear this. And I was just terrified through the rest of the thing. And my cousins thought it was great. And there was a part in there where they actually had an Ed Gein thing where they actually had a room where there were lampshades that were made of human flesh.
Ooh.
And, you know, a chair made of human bone. And I had my eyes closed for the rest of the thing.
Well, that was probably right about the time, like, Texas Chainsaw and stuff was out. And
well, this was when I was way older than I was proud to be scared by this thing. I should have been able to handle it.
He was 25.
It was college.
He was 25.
It was on my honeymoon. Right, right there.
And what of many things you were afraid of?
Yeah. Commitment.
And that lasted that long.
But yeah, so it's always interesting to me, like, why I love to watch things that are scary and freaky and disgusting or whatever, but, like, I don't necessarily want to go to the haunted house.
And I had the opposite reaction where I wanted more.
Yeah, like, that was a gateway to you for the real, like, get up in my business. But
see, what happened with me was I had that moment where, like, I don't remember, you know, I don't know how old I was. It was early teen years where I loved horror stuff. I wanted, you know, I consumed any kind of horror, fantasy, science fiction stuff I could get my hands on, books or movies or whatever. And you know, it was before video. Mm-hmm. Nobody had a VCR at that point. Mm-hmm. They were rich.
Yeah, they weren't.
Because I knew people that had them, but it was like, you know, that was something that was the parents had, and the kids
beta.
Weren't allowed to touch.
Beta.
Yeah, the Betamax.
Beta.
So. Yeah, you were just like, it was an opportunistic thing. Is like, if you knew that, like, I mean, I remember so vividly when I was like 11 having a conversation. Somebody said, Plan 9 from Outer Space is coming on tonight. And we were like, oh my God.
You got to make sure
you're at the right place. You got to have access to a TV. You got to do this stuff.
Nothing that stands in my way.
Yeah, you're not going to DVR that.
Right.
Exactly. No. Or go to the local, you know, video mart and
check Netflix.
Or check online and see when it's coming on again.
Right.
So that you could make sure and be ready for it. You didn't know until you got the TV guide that
Oh, I would do that too. I would escape. What's coming up? And
so, is there anything that like any horror
episode of Doctor Who was coming up?
There was a like the TV guide, quote unquote, that came with the newspaper. It actually had in the back a listing of all the movies.
One of the things
I would do on Saturday or Sunday, whenever that would come out, is I would go through there and go, what's coming on, what's coming on? And I would just look at every movie that was coming on and then kind of go, oh, that's Saturday. I got to try to remember that's coming on.
Yeah.
So you had to put in a lot of effort. It wasn't just like, well, I'll just go BitTorrent that and watch it.
Right.
Or I'll just pop down to the old Blockbuster and rent it.
I remember that when the
world of video opened up and the mom and pop video shops were everywhere.
Oh.
You know, there were so many around Burlington that we were like, and we found one, me and a friend of mine who was a horror movie geek too. We would go, neither one of us had a VCR, but this place you could rent the VCR for the weekend.
Wow.
And it was like, it was fairly expensive for, you know, because I think I had a paper route at the time. So, I mean, I had no money really. But like, we would pool our resources and we would go rent this VCR for Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Right.
And on Friday we would rent the VCR and we'd rent like six movies.
Yeah.
So we would sit up all night and watch like six movies just back to back to back. We'd sleep about 3 hours, take the movies back,
and
rent
more.
Six more movies. So like we hadn't been able to see and we could finally had access to. And it was like, but it was the cool part was, I mean, it wasn't like Dave's Videodrome, but it was because it was a mom and pop place. There was no kind of quality standards the way Blockbuster tried to enforce that. You know, we're not really going to handle that kind of material. Like these video shops were like whatever they could get their hands on, you get it in there. And actually, there was one next to the cinema in Graham that I kind of got friendly with the guy that ran the place, and like, he knew on Friday night I was coming in to get horror movies, so he would actually hold the new release horror stuff for me.
Wow.
Because, like, I would come in and it was always like, you know, Island of the Fishmen or something from Italian, like, schlock horror, but, like, I didn't care.
The bad dubbing.
That's where I got Scalps, the Fred Olen Ray movie there.
Oof.
So, and I'm not even going to hold that against the guy.
You should.
It was really bad.
And the next day, the building burned down.
Oh, man.
Did you ever go to, I don't know how long you've been in North Carolina.
About 15 years.
Okay, this would have been before you were still in New York. There was a place in Chapel Hill that I was able to take Marty once a long time ago, and it was called, and I'm sure you know Videodrome, the Cronenberg movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which I love Cronenberg, and I love Videodrome in particular.
Yep.
This dude, it was this old kind of hippie dude in Chapel Hill. He opened a video store, and it was called Dave's Videodrome. And it was like it kind of semi in the basement of this other business, and like you would go in there, and like he had everything that nobody else had.
Right.
It was like the most obscure, warped, twisted selection of movies you've ever seen. Like one whole wall of kung fu movies, like every kung fu movie available he had.
Well, and the thing too, he would get these like laser discs that friends would like take them for him.
Yeah, he had a buddy in Tokyo
who would get these weird Japanese movies or European movies that you could not get in America, and they would videotape it and then send it to him, and he would rent out these homemade movies.
So there was
movies.
A lot of like white boxes with the name of the movie written in Sharpie.
It was kind of one of those at High Point when I first moved down here, and they had I don't remember specifically any movies, but there were some odd, and I was the same thing. I'm like, I'm going down there and I'm getting a couple of these crazy movies.
We went to a place in High Point a long time ago.
It was
out on the other end of town.
Yeah.
Out past the Walmart.
Yeah.
On the left, next to a carpet store.
Yes. That's the one.
That's cool. Because that's where we saw. I never rented it, and I wish I had, because I've looked for it. Is Lee Van Cleef, The Satanic Mechanic. And I've never seen it, but that name just stuck with me, and I could see that picture of him on the box.
Yeah, it looked awesome.
I mean, that's Bob Houck from Escape from New York. And that's,
is he good, bad, or ugly?
He is bad.
That might have been where I picked up Army of Darkness, or one of those, started with the Bruce Campbell things. I think I might have picked up there.
And you mean like the Evil Dead?
Evil Dead.
Thumbs up. The third one was on just... Wow, recently.
Oh, yeah.
HBO. I like this, and I'm probably the opposite, and I think Marty probably agrees with me, but I'm sort of the opposite of what everybody else seems to say, is that, like, they thought, man, Evil Dead's okay. They love the second one, and some people just have this emotional thing with the third one. They love the broad comedy aspect of it. I am exactly the opposite. I love the first one.
Right.
The second one is good, and it's got a lot of cool stuff, The third one, I don't know. It's just too far away. You know? Because, like, the first one is vicious.
Well, the first one, yeah. We saw that just recently when they did the whole Halloween thing downtown in Greensboro. At,
they showed Evil Dead?
Yeah.
Awesome.
It was hysterical.
I wrote, when Evil Dead was released, I had been reading Fangoria magazine, so I had read, like, so many articles about this movie is coming. This movie, these guys are, these kids from Detroit are in the mountains of Tennessee making this movie, and it's going to come out. It's going to be vicious. And
the
Stephen King said it's
horror film.
Yeah, ferociously original horror film of our time, Stephen King says. So I was waiting for it. And so, like, when it got released, I don't know what month it was, but it was cold as hell because I rode a moped from where we lived to the cinema in Graham to see it. And it was so freaking cold that as I'm riding the moped, the tears are coming out of my eyes because the wind is so cold. And when I got there, the tears were frozen in my hair.
Wow.
Because, like, I had this, like, unruly mane hair. But, like, I rode that moped in, like, 10-degree weather to see it. And like, I think I went back.
I feel both ways.
81? Yeah, I knew it was 81.
You said you didn't know what. Oh, you said not what.
No, what month? What month it was? I knew it was 81 because I went back and I think I saw it again 2 days later.
Yeah.
Because, like, I saw it and then I went and told my friend Mike. I was like, "Dude, you have got to see this movie." And he was like, "Oh, I think I'll go see it." And I said, "Well, I'll go with you."
April 5th. So we went back.
Was it April?
April.
Wow.
Why was it so freaking cold in April?
It was a fluke.
I don't know. It was. There was no more room in hell.
That's right.
So the dead will ride the moped.
Yay.
I thought the dead were just going to do like a long guitar solo.
Like the longest guitar solo in history.
Boy, now there's another story.
Goddamn hippie drum circle shit.
Wait, let me stand up and dance.
I did the same thing with Escape from New York, though, because I mean, I went to the same theater, to the cinema in Graham, and I saw it. I just walked out. Like, that's the greatest freaking movie I've ever seen. So, like, I went back 2 days later and saw it again, and was just sitting there, and I came out thinking, that's the greatest freaking movie I've ever seen.
Let me tell a brief story and then see if anybody's done this themselves. So, you know, you have friends who aren't into the same sort of stuff. You have friends who are like, yeah, they want to watch, you know, Forrest Gump. They're not really wanting to watch a movie where people are, you know,
then
put into a cage and tortured for the rest of their life.
The living dead.
So, at one point when I was in high school, they had a double feature at the drive-in, and it was The Evil Dead, or Evil Dead, and The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. This was the double feature. I had never seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and of course, it was legendary. Evil Dead, I had seen and thought was awesome. So, myself, my girlfriend, my best friend at the time and this other girl who he was trying to make time with all said, yeah, let's go to that. That'll be awesome. I was excited. They were horrified because none of it is fun. None of those movies are fun. They're all just incredibly rough.
Tense. And,
especially Texas Chainsaw Massacre. And
that's a different level of rough.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That was the second feature. So, like, we make it through Evil Dead, and I'm like, oh, man, I've been really wanting to watch this. This is supposed to be awesome.
They're like, nope.
And it's, well, no, we watched
it. They did.
But they were not happy with me. They were not happy with me at all. Have you ever done that? Like, so I know you've talked about Clockwork Orange that you and Chris watched.
Yes, a friend of ours, Chris, we watched, we were working together and I didn't even have cable. Well, he had HBO and everything, so we would go over to his house and party and drink after work. So we're over there and, like, we fire up the TV and Clockwork Orange is on. And I had read about it, again, legendary, read about it in Starlog and Genre Press. So we start watching, and I think he just kind of sat there just like, what the fuck is this? What are we watching?
That would be me when y'all turned me on to it.
And I was just like, I watched it, and like, I just was, I wanted to just see it again, like, immediately, because there was, I knew.
Well, you need to watch it without him there polluting the experience.
Exactly. Plus, it's one of those things, Clockwork Orange is one of those movies, I think, after I watched it the first time, I knew there was so much going on there that I got about half of what was really going on. Because, like, I sat there for a half hour after it went off thinking about how it made me feel.
Yep.
And I was like, wait a minute, I'm happy about that? How the hell? Why am I happy about that? That's a terrible thing to be happy about. What did he just do to me? And then as I kind of reconciled all that in my mind, it made me just respect the hell out of Stanley Kubrick for what he was able to do. Because, I mean, that's what a filmmaker should be able to do, is like make you, and it sounds bad in a way, but really manipulate you emotionally. I mean, get in there and monkey around with your brain a little bit and do something that really leaves you in a different kind of place from when you started. Not just, you know,
escapism, sort of.
Well, you get up and like, did you see that thing blow up? Wow! That's got some good CGI in it. You know,
no, it's like all of a sudden you're really thinking in a different way.
Yeah. Yes, it really changes.
It does change.
That's the difference between art and just entertainment.
And Michael Bay or Roland Emmerich.
That's the difference between art and shit.
Yeah. That's true.
So, Janine, I know. It's your, like, you have been faced with this numerous times just because of your furnishings and the things that are found in your home. I'm sure you've had moments where people have walked in and wondered where they had.
Oh, you know, yeah.
Is that lampshade made of human flesh?
Oops. This lampshade smells of death. That's not a lampshade.
So, I mean, how often have you had to face that look of people going, "Are what?"
Yeah. Well, I've had my husband tell me numerous times of like, honey, not everybody's into Halloween, because I'll just take any opportunity to just expound on years of how much I've come to love and be part of the Halloween experience. I've learned to shut up a lot and just sort of censor myself until I get amongst the folks, which, you know, I try to you know, be around people that are into it way more than I are with people that are not into it. And I can kind of sense, you know, right away when people start to, they just shut up. Unless they participate.
Or they start backing away.
Yeah, so
they look at you with their mouth agape and are just like,
well, I know my neighborhood,
about?
There's probably at least half the people go, I can't believe that they have all that stuff around there with those young children. And I'm like, well, And I really don't stop to think about it, and I suppose I should more often, where I'm like, gee, I wonder if I'm kind of, you know, desensitizing my children a little too much. But
you may be, but you're not desensitizing them to real world horror.
No.
You're desensitizing them to the to fantasy. It's the fun
it is,
stuff.
It is, and I think, well, that's the
good.
Main.
I think it's
huge,
totally good.
That's a huge thing of where I feel like they can do whatever, and they get just as excited about Halloween and all of the stuff that we do as I do, and that it's like it's a family thing, but it is, and it's part of what we do,
right.
And they're excited about it, and they're part of the creative process, and I think that's more important overall, because it's like, wow, my parents are really into this, and they're embracing it, and it's okay. So it's like, because it took me a long time to really allow myself as much acceptance of what I do, as far as I love Halloween and I want to own a haunted house and I go to conventions where there are people of the same, you know, mentality, and we all just get into it, and that it's just like, you know, the mothership has landed, and
the convention experience is revelatory.
Oh,
the first time you
gosh.
Go to like a convention like that, the first one I went to,
a Fangoria one,
was the Weekend of Horrors in Durham. That was like the first time you go, and it's like, again, you feel like you're this closet case.
Absolutely.
With like your little weird fetish,
you're
your little weird kind
one.
Of exactly, and then you go in and it's like, Jesus Christ, there's a hotel full of these people.
Oh,
well, and not just that, there's weirder people than you.
There are and there are people,
and it's always
all
a liberating,
ages,
it's
you
always
know?
A liberating experience when you can look at somebody else and go, well, I thought I was weird.
Exactly.
Well,
right.
Jesus.
We walked into this horror convention in Durham, and there's Forrest Ackerman
standing there. Forrest Ackerman,
famous Monsters of Filmland, and I'm like, that's Forrest. And I went over and I said, Forry. And he was like, hey. And I could not. I was like, I, this is the amazing moment.
He walked across the reflecting pool without even getting his feet wet and shook our hands. It was like,
it was really cool.
Forry Ackerman.
But there were so many faces there, like Tom Savini.
Yeah, I met Tom Savini. I paid like extra for an extra ticket so I could get into this cocktail party.
Yeah.
And I like sat and talked to Tom Savini and his wife.
Well,
and
I actually talked
to
Pat Priest.
I just kind of sat there like, you're awesome.
Speaking of fetish.
Yeah. True.
He said, now you're done now. Can you move along on your side? I'm going to need a minute.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Go do that math.
Glad I wore my long coat.
Man.
Pat Friess from
Pat
the Monsters?
Friess. I met her, yes. She's hysterical. Awesome. She's wonderful. She's just,
you've met a lot. Didn't you meet Sid Haig?
Yeah, I met Sid Haig. My husband has autographed photo. I'm trying to think of the other guys that we've met. A lot of...
you met Bill Mosley?
But, yeah, Bill Mosley, yeah. I
leave my plate!
But see, you know what? He was kind of disappointing because he really didn't interact very much.
Really?
He was just sort of like, you know, give me your $5 and I'll give you a picture kind of thing. But the Pat Priest, we talked to her for, 15, 20 minutes. They never gave her, like, her own copies of The Monster. She had to, like, go and buy her own
really? That is crappy.
She had to give mimeograph her own script. They wouldn't even let her have the pages.
It was just weird. It was so sad and weird. And what was the guy that did in the Hills Have Eyes?
Michael Berryman?
Yes.
Oh, you met Michael Berryman? Oh, that's great.
We've been going to conventions for 6 years now.
I've seen some of these photo albums. They're pretty impressive.
Yeah,
and
we ended up, we were in Chicago. It was in Chicago where they were having two conventions. There was Transworld, and then there was, it might have been Fangoria. Because we were in the hotel that Fangoria was happening, and then the Transworld was in another huge convention center in
this
in
is
Chicago.
Like a haunting convention.
Yeah. The Transworld is, it's basically for vendors that they go and buy for the year. You know, there's Halloween stuff. There's, of course, Leg Avenue, if you're familiar with all.
My favorite!
And they would do, that's mostly the guy, they would, like, ring a bell, and they would say, we're now going to have runway model, and it was, the place cleared out, and they're all standing there.
Dr. Pavlov.
Oh, exactly. It was, and then,
you know. Yeah, but they're not drooling.
It was, and my husband and another friend of mine have pictures, numerous pictures, of, Grayson, like the bee costumes, the girls in bee, and I was just like, whatever, and they're trying to get me to take a picture with some guy in a gladiator outfit. I'm like, if it's not Russell Crowe, I'm not interested. I like the real thing.
He's not going to unleash hell, but I got no interest.
And I know these guys are probably even more likely gay, so it's just, the thrill is
still
there.
Fun to look at.
It wasn't as thrilling.
It's a guy girl.
Yeah, you guys are
more. We had that conversation at work just recently about the fake boob thing. Yeah. It's like, hey, it's still good to look at.
Yeah, so. See, you guys always
it's
are visual.
It's funny, when I met Savini, we were talking about walking up on 4E Ackerman. I talked to him some, but again, I was very kind of awestruck, and mm-hmm. I was much younger. I think I could probably have a better conversation with him now, but like I was so awestruck that I basically was just kind of watching him watch the crowd, and like the whole time he was just sitting there going, "That's 4E Ackerman over there. Look, that's 4E Ackerman. Look." So like, he was more impressed with the fact that 4E Ackerman was there than anything else. So. But his wife was very nice, and I met Brink Stevens.
Yeah,
who was in like a lot of really.
Is it Brink
bad
or Brinky? Is it Brink?
I think it's Brink.
Okay, I thought it was Brinky.
just with an E. It's the English spelling.
Okay,
it's like shop.
Yeah, shoppy.
Shoppy.
Ye old Brink.
E.
E.
.com.
And then we went to ZombieCon, which was very cool, but there was like some really weird shit going on there too. There's like this kind of this one booth where basically they were beating a guy with a plastic baseball bat. I think
they were using some real stuff
or something, some kind of foam bat. It's basically just to see how much he could take, and he was like, yeah, I can take it, do it again. Oh, and they were just like beating him until he was all right.
For a dollar you could hit him with a bat.
Yeah,
really.
Little sadomasochism here.
You said it was like all the little things where you throw the ball, the dunking
thing.
Yeah,
that's what this was.
This was like the sort of
this was more hands on.
This was the Gaspar Noé.
Like a zombie with a bat kind of thing?
This was the Gaspar Noé irreversible
like to get hurt. And his friends liked to see it. And he was all covered with bruises and dirt and cuts and things. And it wasn't makeup. It was horrible.
I mean, I've seen some crazy crap, but that's
this was really, it was really horrible.
That was like uncomfortable.
But there were, what are the little hot lingerie women that were there?
Oh, I don't remember the kind of horror.
They're the burlesque.
Yes, it was like a Greensboro burlesque.
Oh,
thing
like,
was there.
What's her name?
It's the woman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
But anyway, she was there with her troupe, and they were all fabulous. There was a kids' show in the morning when I grew up. It was called the Mr. Bill Show, and it wasn't the Oh No, Mr. Hand, Mr. Bill Show. This was the
Oh No, Mr. Bill's dog.
It was not that. It was this the Channel 13 in Nashville. They had a guy, Bill Norwood, who was the weatherman, and he would host the kids' show in the morning before school, and they would show cartoons. And but one of the things they would show was this thing where it was like a, it wasn't Puff the Magic Dragon, but it was some kind of magical dragon thing, and it was stop motion animation. And it was probably really crappily done and everything, but it used to freak me completely out in the morning. And I would, if that came on, I would just turn off cartoons. Really? That's how much I didn't like it. I didn't want to watch cartoons before school. But if it was Bugs Bunny, it was all good.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But he would do that, and he would, you know, give the weather and stuff, then show another cartoon. And it was kind of your, that was the thing. Mom would come in, flip on the TV, put it on Mr. Bill's show, and then I would, like, wake up.
See, we have Rocket Ship 7. It was Dave Thomas. It wasn't the Dave Thomas, but he was
a Wendy's thing?
No.
Or
no.
Dave Thomas,
SCTV?
Yeah, no,
as the
none
beaver.
Of them. No,
as
Dave
the Thomas,
Dave
as the beaver.
Thomas. No, and it was the same thing. He would come on and be like, Roger, I mean, they had this theme music, and it's like going through my head. But Dave, it was Rocket Ship 7, and he would blast off with Dave Thomas, the Rocket Ship 7.
Did they have a set, like a rocket set?
Yeah.
That's
cool. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Very cool. I would have loved
and
that.
And I think he was either an anchor, mm-hmm. weather guy kind of thing. But yeah, I remember watching that, and again, they would do the cartoon. No claymation, kind of frankly.
Yeah,
stuff.
Mr. Bill had a podium. He would just stand there and tell you the weather and then show another cartoon. Kind of
oh, they had a set.
He was like animated, like a cartoon preacher.
it was like Toastmasters.
Yeah,
kind
of
get up there and go, you know, read from his script. No, that was the thing we were talking about earlier, the thing where they played Reeling in the Years, his theme song, the thing on WBTV. One of the weather guys hosted that. So he would, like, do the weather stuff all day, and then he'd stay up till 11:30 and do this show, I guess.
Well, see, and UHF, gosh, what channel was it? UHF was always, like, he was a cowboy. Mr. Bob or Bob.
There was,
something.
Yeah. What was the, did you have that guy? The guy?
It was
the
after
red?
School. It was an after school thing.
What was his name? The cowboy who was like always from up at Tweetsie and you'd go up there? Because he would do that stuff on the weekend. What was that guy's name?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember because it was a similar thing after school. It was Billy Bob or Bob something. And
Joe Bob Briggs.
Yeah.
It was his name was Kirby, was his last name. And his first name, I can't remember what his name was, but he was always at the Rockin' K Ranch. And he was a singing cowboy. He would get up there and he would sing songs. And then he would show Kukla, Fran, and Ollie.
Oh,
stuff.
My gosh. Kukla, Fran, and Ollie. Now, there are some scary things. I have issues with puppets,
those
too.
Puppets. Those did kind of... There was
Jerry Lewis Kukla. And Lamb Chop.
Yeah, well, Lamb Chop, not so much. But the other... The Kukla with his little overbite or whatever. Just
yeah, because Ollie was the little kind of clown.
He had a speech impediment.
That's it. Clowns or puppets with speech impediments.
That's right.
Disturbed me.
We need to raise money for them. But there was a Kukla, Fran, and Ollie episode where that was the Loch Ness Monster, and it was this giant eel that was swimming, and people were trying to catch it, and that stuff freaked me out when I would go down to the creek or something.
Do those weird European dubbed,
yes.
like little children running through the streets of Europe somewhere. And
what about the child catcher from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
that's not the scariest thing in the world.
That was jarring.
Yeah.
That stuff used to terrify me when he'd dance around with the lollipops. You know?
He's on one of those mandatory lists now. Every time he moves, he has to register.
He's got like a little anklet.
Yeah, right.
He's on house arrest.
He can't live within like so many yards of a school or a lollipop shop.
Steve, do you remember an after school thing that they did? And it might have been on Channel 48 too. That was the when UHF kind of really came online big. How far in are we here?
I don't know.
When UHF came
too
online,
too far to go back.
There's no going right over our head for sure. They had like this thing. It was Channel 48 or Channel 28, and they had this little. It was like sort of an animated thing. It was like really primitive computer stuff. So they basically had like a monitor set up, and they had like a little goofy animated blob guy with like a face and little stubby legs and arms, and like I think somebody off camera could basically talk, and this thing would like and it would,
that's kind of freaky sound.
It was weird, but like they showed that he would host like this block of stuff after school, so like every day you come home and it would be this thing here, and I forget the character's name. But, like, he would host, like, that's where I saw Star Blazers.
Yeah.
The anime thing.
Oh, God.
I saw that, and, like, a bunch of kind of, like, Japanese cartoons. It was my first kind of, other than Speed Racer.
Right.
That was, and when I first saw it, obviously, I was like, damn, that looks just like Speed Racer. It had that same distinctive
look.
That kind of whole, everybody's like, Japanese, just a little too round eye. Like, oh,
gosh.
Let's let Steve talk.
Well, I got nothing to say, man. Y'all put me on the spot. I wasn't prepared. I didn't study.
Do you think we really study?
Yeah, obviously, no studying.
This is just a lifelong obsession.
Remember Bob Gordon?
Bob Gordon.
He was like a science kind of guy. He had his little show on the...
Kind of like Mr. Wizard type?
Might have been on like Saturdays. And he would do little science experiments and then do like show a sci-fi movie.
Oh, cool. No, that's very cool. I remember the name. Sounds very familiar, but I can't say that I remember... It's very specific.
Remember, he's talking about the weatherman. Remember Frank Deal?
Oh, yeah.
Dialing
for Dollars movie.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Occasionally, he would show it. There'd be a scary movie on there.
I remember that was, to me, my recollection of that is being sick and missing school. Because it was a weekday thing. Like, if you were out sick at, like, 10:30 in the morning, it would be the Dialing for Dollars movie.
Wow. We didn't have any movies during the day, during the week.
It was always, it was cool. And like they
wheel,
would,
he'd spin that wheel for...
Do you remember the thing out of WGN where they would play video games and you'd have to say bang
pow
or
pow
shoot.
Pow pow pow. There was one that was a UHF thing with the Bob character and you'd have to go pow 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 and they would shoot something
would
somewhere. Yeah.
It was an Intellivision game.
Yep.
And there was like a targeting reticle in the middle, and ships were flying around randomly.
I tried so hard to get on it.
So it was actually on television?
Yeah.
It's on. You're in the phone?
You would call.
And you would say,
I just said this image of you just sitting on the sofa going, it's not working.
You're on the phone. And the other one is hitting the button. He's hitting the button every time you say bang.
Yeah, my rotary dial.
I missed that part. I thought you were just sitting there.
No.
This was on WGN.
What kind of technology did you people grow up with? That's amazing.
Our technology was from the future.
Exactly.
Apparently so.
Some sort of
like a back engineered something from Roswell. What the hell are you thinking of talking
about? It's all fiber optics and optically.
It's all ball bearings and.
Yodas and shit.
Exactly. Yodas and shit. I had a cool aunt and uncle. I had a couple of cool aunts and uncles when I was growing up, but this one couple, they were young. They were the youngest. Were they? Second youngest. And they had myself and the other guy cousins that were similar ages over to their house. They had HBO, and it was at Halloween, and we went over to their house to watch Halloween.
Halloween night. A small American town. 15 years ago.
I spent 8 years trying to reach him. And then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil. I think he'll come back.
Seen it and I'd heard of it and I was too young to watch it.
Like how long?
Oh, I don't know. What year did it come out?
79.
So I was probably like 1980, 1981. Okay. So I was, I don't know, maybe I was old enough to watch it, but I know I wasn't old enough to watch an R-rated movie. So we went over there and...
Yeah.
Well, no, not illegally. They had gotten permission from the parents of all the cousins to get to go watch this thing. So we went over there and they had ordered pizzas and popcorn. And the movie was starting, and you were talking about this earlier. We were watching WGN because it was Halloween night, and they were showing their, you know, creature features. They showed Plan 9 from Outer Space. And I had never seen it, but I had read like the
Stupid
Gold.
Human.
Dudley Manlove.
Dudley Manlove, the greatest cinematic moniker ever.
But so we're watching this on WGN, and I had read the Golden Turkey Award books and stuff, and so I knew this was
before Michael Medved was like a radical right wing
piece of crap,
uber
Christian. We watched this thing and they were doing all that bang bang stuff with the video game, and then they would show the movie and I was like, I want to watch this movie, and we're watching it and I was just like, this really is terrible, it's awful, but it was wonderful. And my cousins were like, just why are we watching this? And I was like, no, you gotta watch this, it's supposed to be awesome. But then Halloween started. We watched the whole movie except for the one part where PJ Souls bears her boobs because my uncle changed the channel.
And
went
back.
So clearly he knew what was going on.
Yeah, he had seen it. And he was like, don't worry, there's only one scene with nudity and I'll flip away from that, come back. The rest of it's not bloody. He told the parents.
You were a cool uncle.
But we were all just sitting there just flipping out. It was so scary. But it was like really, really cool.
Well, I have a great uncle story. My uncle Ralph, my aunt Kathy, her husband Ralph, was the younger uncle. Very cool. I was visiting up in the mountains where they live, and they had a VCR. Actually owned a VCR. I was like, oh my God, you people are living the high life. So like, I was going to go hang out at their house for the night, and he was like, well, you want to go rent some movies?
Yeah.
So we go down, and he's like, he said, just pick out something you want, and like, there was Dawn of the Dead.
Oh.
And Dawn of the Dead was like, I had never seen it. I'd read about it, and it was like, that was like the freaking Ark of the Covenant up there. Right.
1968, George Romero brought us Night of the Living Dead. It became the classic horror film of its time. Now, George Romero brings us the most intensely shocking motion picture experience for all times. Dawn of the Dead. Night of the Living Dead has ended. Dawn of the Dead is here.
Gets up and kills. The people it kills get up and kill.
They must be destroyed on sight.
When there is no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth. Dawn of the Dead.
So like we got it and like and he and I went back and it was like the put the little kids to bed, pop some popcorn, and that was my formative experience of
That's
watching
awesome.
Dawn of the Dead, and it was like
very cool.
I had that memory. It's like so vivid. I can remember what their furniture looked like.
Have you talked to him about it?
Yeah, I did, and he was like, "Wow,
That's
man,
funny.
I just."
Does he even remember it?
He said, I remember going and getting movies, but I said, man, that was George Romero. What the hell is wrong with you?
See, I was the cool aunt because I have like 14 nieces and nephews, and most of them are nephews. And so, you know, you figure you can be a little rougher with the guys. So I would, you know, bring them in. We would go to all the haunted house things together, mm-hmm. and we would do the haunted house things together, and we would watch all the scary movies together. And it's like, I think to this day, probably a couple of them will be like, yeah, I remember when we would watch scary movies together. And so that was, I was the cool aunt.
That's cool.
I brought them into the craziness.
You made them what they are today.
I am. I did.
I'm sure not healthy that so many of my recollections or so many of my, the great memories that I have of like experiences revolve around movies, and particularly weird movies. I remember, like I said, going to Dave's Videodrome in Chapel Hill was just like this thing. It was like, it became very ritualized.
And that was
like,
late in life. That wasn't.
Oh, yeah, I was in my 20s.
Right.
But like, it was like, I had a 4-day schedule. I would come home from work at like 3:30 in the morning on Friday morning.
Yeah.
I would go and I'd go to bed, I'd get up and drive straight to Chapel Hill and go see what Dave had. And then like I'd hang out at the counter and talk to him and his girlfriend, and we'd talk, and it was like always something really fucked up playing like on the monitor behind the counter. He'd be watching something just god awful, and it was like, what are you watching, man? I'm going to rent that next. And it was where, have you ever heard of the movie Necromantic?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
I had this, and I think we probably talked about this with KMO, but there was, and I know you've seen Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Oh, love it.
That's the greatest. Do you remember the scene where he is going in and saving the animals?
Oh, yeah.
In the pet shop, and he keeps walking past the snakes.
Yeah,
and
That
was my relationship with Necromantic, because I had read this review that just, I dare you to watch this. This is the worst thing you will ever see. So, like, every Friday, I would go to Dave's, and I would rent a bunch of movies, and I'd walk.
Look at it.
Would be there, and it was just, taunting me. And finally, it was like,
okay.
I'll take it. And it wasn't, like, the worst thing I've... It may have been the worst thing I'd ever seen at that point. It was right up there.
It's still messed up.
It's very just, messed up, but like, it was shocking to me at the time that, like, you know, we've talked about the fact that people made this. This was like
money was raised.
Money was raised. A group of people got together.
Yeah, and not just like, one crazy guy.
How are we going to build this corpse for the sex scene? We could use this or this. And it's like,
was it Necromantic 2 that Dave said he couldn't watch all
yeah,
the group?
Yeah, he watched it in little bits.
Right, because it was too much.
And it's pretty screwed it's up. Messed up. But that's also where I rented Urotsuki Doji, mm-hmm. Legend of the Overfiend.
Which I own on DVD.
Which is far out, like as far as...
It's rough.
It's rough. Have you ever seen that?
Uh-uh.
You probably don't want
to. I don't
way. Think it's a good thing for...
No.
And I'm not no sexism
no,
intended,
no.
but it's not...
Hey, little
it's not
lady.
A ladylike anime, to say.
Hey, there's no daisies and butterflies and whatnot. Well, if they were, they would have giant
they would have a
tentacle
like
penis.
Tentacle penis coming off of it.
Well, I don't know. It might be interesting, though.
And
as enticing as that sounds.
It does sound enticing.
And and that's where I got Meet the Feebles. And
I figured that one was coming.
We sat and watched that at a kind of boys' night out get-together when everybody was in a firmly altered state of consciousness.
Yeah.
And like we all and I had watched it and so I knew what we were in for and my joy came from watching them watch it.
Yeah.
It's like I was just like I would know what was coming up and I'd start watching everybody else to see how they reacted to the next scene. And the next morning everybody got up and was like,
wow.
What's that? The hell did we watch? Is that real?
Did a rabbit fuck a hippo?
Was a fox doing a musical number about sodomy?
Sodomy, you must think it very odd of me that I enjoy the act of sodomy. You might call the wrath of God on me, but if you tried it, then you might agree that you enjoy the act of sodomy. Don't worry if you feel ashamed, it's been around for years. Thousands more than can be named are interested in reels. Don't worry about hell, no harm will come to your soul. We're not all Pentecostal, but everybody's got an asshole. Let me tell you about sodomy. You must think it very odd of me, but I enjoy the act of sodomy. You might call the wrath of God on me, but if you tried it, then you might agree that you enjoy the act of sodomy.
Did I dream that, or do I just need to turn myself into the authorities? Because
I think I'm on a list now.
Hand out the Thorazine.
I'm not going to be able to fly.
That's right. I'm on the next flight. Homeland Security's after me now for watching that.
There were a lot of those kind of movies that were kind of like the ones, Buried Alive, where it had the band in 37 countries. And it was rough. It was like Blue something. It was a different title that it was released under. Different titles, but Buried Alive was one I remember.
You talking about the video label?
There was
that
a
was
movie.
Released under? Oh,
no,
okay.
No, but it was like it was called Blue something else was the name of the movie in another country.
Blue Bayou, starring Blue Linda Bayou. Ronstadt.
Don't it make my Bayou blue?
We saw you're talking about not being old enough to see R-rated movies when The Beast Within came out.
Oh yeah,
yeah. It was had this a warning thing. It was like no one under 17 will be admitted. Period.
Right.
Warning. This preview cannot show all of the terrifying and grotesque transformation sequences from the last 30 minutes of The Beast Within. The filmmakers strongly suggest that those who may be shocked by this unique, horrifying movie use caution when seeing the film. There's something inside of Michael.
Never seen anything like it before.
Something that's been waiting, watching, and growing.
Michael?
Something evil.
I know you're in here.
And whatever it is ready to be released.
I came back for them. All of them.
And now no one is safe. You have been warned. You are dared to remain calm during the horrifying final 30 minutes of The Beast Within. Even you may not survive. You have been warned.
Because, I mean, at that point, R-rated movies,
really,
you could get in if your folks or whoever, if you were with an adult. But this was like nobody under 17 admitted. I was in middle school. I had to be seventh grade.
Yeah.
Because it was 82.
Yeah.
So a dude that I went to school with, he liked horror movies. His brother liked horror movies. Well, his dad actually liked horror movies. So, like, we went over, and his dad took all of us to the Park Twin Theater in Burlington and basically coerced the person running the ticket booth to let us in.
Wow.
So, like, I have this great memory of going in and watching this forbidden movie and loving it. And then going back to their house, and they were from New Jersey, and they were a big Italian family from New Jersey. And, like, his mom had cooked up, like, this big thing of, like, sausage and peppers and tomato sauce. So, like, we went back, and I just remember, like, and his little sister wouldn't eat because we'd watched this movie with all the gore.
Oh, she had watched it, too.
She came to, he was just like, yeah, kids, load up. We're going to see it.
Yeah.
She was maybe a year younger than us,
yeah.
And his brother was a little older than us, and the dude that I went to school with was my age,
yeah.
Obviously, so. But, like, his dad just kind of got us all in to go see it.
I remember my mom taking me in and saying, yeah, it's okay, he can go in. And they would sell me the ticket.
I
could
go in.
I remember my dad taking, again, I think it was probably a safer time to do this, but, like, my dad would take me on Friday nights. I would go to the Park Twin Theater. It was a two-screen theater. And he would drop me off, and I would see one of two movies. It didn't even matter. I didn't even look in the paper anymore.
You just would go.
I would go say, yeah, that one. And I'd go see a movie. And I saw, like, a bunch of stuff I probably never would have seen, you know, if I had otherwise. But, like, I saw, like, White Buffalo.
Really?
Yeah. No. Wait, White Buffalo is the Charles Bronson thing. I saw a movie called Buffalo Rider.
The Western.
It's a Western.
Yeah.
But I thought it was awesome at the time. And it's, like, it's an Italian thing. So I saw, like, a ton of obscure Italian
stuff. Well, there was so much Italian stuff that came out. All those Escape from, or the Bronx Warriors.
Warriors of the Wasteland. Yes. All that kind of post-apocalyptic stuff.
Well, I actually watched Christine and Children of the Corn in a drive-in.
Stephen King double feature.
Yes.
That Outlander.
I would not.
We have your woman.
I would not get out of my car to go to the snack bar when Christine was because it was like we're surrounded by cars. Holy shit!
It's like watching corn. Charles at the beach.
Exactly. I know. I'm like, well, yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking.
A double feature in a used car lot.
Exactly. That's scary. I'm like, I'm not getting out of this car.
We would go to the marathon at the drive-in in Burlington, these marathon movie nights where they would show five movies.
Oh my God.
And it was $5 a carload.
Holy cow.
So, like, as many people as you can pack into a car, $5, you're in. And it was like the rotation was always exactly the same. First movie sucked.
Yeah.
Second movie was pretty good. Third movie was damn good.
Yeah.
Fourth movie sucked.
Kind of sucked.
And then last movie we never saw because it would start and you're going, oh, I'm tired.
No.
This sucks.
When would they start the porno?
They didn't do porn. That was another drive.
Oh, okay.
That was the one that when we were like just driving, we'd like park.
Yeah. Right, you could kind of see.
We were like trying to park it somewhere nearby. And,
I think.
Did you ever go see porno at the drive?
Never did.
Yeah, I did a couple times.
Never did.
Okay, that's another show.
Well, no, it's shocking when you come around the corner where you can see the screen and there's a unit that's like 100 feet wide and you're just like, holy shit.
I
feel so inadequate right now.
But those days are long gone.
Plus, my car had a manual transmission. It really would have done me no good.
I did it, as always, with like 10 guys, and it would just be much higher.
Oh, wait a minute. Whoa.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, who else are you going to get to go see?
It might have been your thing.
But it would just be
so
like.
So you never went to the drive-in with 10 guys to watch porn in a movie?
Not that I'd mention out loud.
Not in this country.
Not snuck into a theater.
What do you mean, only 10?
Only 10.
Only 10, no.
That's a Friday night. Saturday night is.
That's when you'd step
out. Saturday night was date night.
Saturday night, yeah. It's break night.
No, but it's like, you know, you'd have 10 guys, you'd all be about, you know, half crazy because it's midnight, and you're like, oh, let's go to the drive-in and see porn. And then we'd go over there, and we'd all sit there, and it would be like an episode of
Children of the Porn.
It'd be like a Porky's episode.
Like a
Porky's movie. You'd just be like,
I can identify him.
You'd be throwing stuff at the other car.
Somebody walked past your car, and the vent glass is open, and something's just kind of hanging out. Miss Ballbreaker comes over and
oh, God.
Pulls you through the vent glass. like a magic trick.
Yeah, that would be. That would be something you'd remember.
Watch me pull a rabbit.
Oh, uh-oh. Not out of my hatchet.
That's a real hat trick right there.
So have we done enough?
I think we've come to the conclusion that we've all warped our brains in a sufficient manner to.
Would we
be sitting here talking about it if we hadn't? I guess.
Don't think you got. No, we wouldn't. That is what made us what we are.
That's exactly right.
Janine, I wanted to give you a chance to, like, if you wanted to tell people where they could find you online.
MommyD.com, MommieD.com is where this woman and I live online.
And there's links from there to your various other endeavors.
YouTube and Facebook, and yes, just look for the Mommy D Show.
We'll maybe throw a link up.
Certainly. That would be lovely.
The two or three people that hear this can find a way to your other stuff.
Yeah, any opportunity to poison the youth of America, I'm all there.
It is what we're here to do. We want to spread the word. I mean, that's why we wanted to do the podcast in the first place.
Well, there's a huge need for the whole B movies to be seen again, and to have those little characters and those little hosts to come out and
that's true. We were going to talk about horror hosts, and we didn't even get there.
Maybe another
time.
Yeah, but we are so awash right now in a sea of overwhelming mediocrity.
Oh, please.
When you look at mainstream, what's released as when you look at what's coming out of Hollywood.
It's all remakes of things that were good.
Exactly.
Bad remakes of good movies. And sometimes, now I think actually we're past that point. We're up to the point of making bad remakes of mediocre movies.
Yeah.
I mean, they're starting to remake stuff that sucked when it came out.
Exactly.
And it really, I don't see it getting any better, because Michael Bay apparently has some involvement with virtually every one of the productions. So
when the Nightmare on Elm Street remake came out, the review on Twitch I read, the guy said that he's finally found something Michael Bay is worse at than directing, and it's producing.
That's saying something.
That is saying something. I mean, it seems like every episode we get in a slam on Michael Bay.
And Roland Emmerich. I don't want to leave Roland in.
They are kind of two birds of the same feather.
Or turds.
Two turds, yeah.
It's just terrible.
Turds and feathers. Stick together.
Ew.
Thank you. That's my contribution.
All right, so from the Flickers in the Cave headquarters.
Deep inside Flickers in the Cave studios, somewhere east of the Rockies.
We need the Super Friends music.
Using the beta capsule. Well, this was good.
All right, let's... this is Marty signing off.
Steve's got a review.
It was pretty good.
Pretty good. This is Mike.
And this is Marty.
Steve.
And Janine.
And we'll see you all...
on the radio.
On the radio. In the cave.
That's right. Same bat time.
That's right.
Same bat channel.
Chat time, same chat channel.
Au revoir.
You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.